Hello and welcome to Dedunking. Now, in my last video addressing Potholer 54's omissions and all that crap, I highlighted this clip that he had here.
But even the most dogmatic and determined professor, who told his students that nothing would be found below the Clovis layer in North America, had to eat his words when archaeologists did find artifacts below the Clovis layer.
And I demonstrated that it was factually incorrect, that the archaeologists all really are well aware that for about three decades it was kind of unfair that the Clovis Mafia or Clovis Police would stop people from having their work like looked at through a non-ridiculous lens. They were basically forced to be looked at as crackpots. And I showed this pretty well in my last video. So when I went to talk to Potholer 54 in his latest video, this CIA thing, because I saw that he had to take it down and re-upload it because he got a bunch of stuff wrong because he assumed that the Y-Files was just a Woo channel instead of like watching a video all the way through or something. I mean, this guy. Anyway, when I saw that, I was like, hey, I smell a little blood in the water. I think I'm going to go ask you about the Clovis Police since you haven't addressed that at all because you don't watch criticisms against you. So I went and did just that. And, well, the adventure that down that rabbit hole shows Potholer 54 as a person more than any other video that I could make. Because though responding to a video, it's like, you know, you're getting a video, a script, and it's easy to say, well, this guy might have got something wrong here. But we bounced back and forth off each other for a couple of days. And by the end of it, he's shifted his position so many times that it's ridiculous. So anyway, you might not get to see my beautiful face as much because I'm going to be putting a lot of words on the screen and all that crap. But let me go ahead and go through this play by play. So I show up on Potholer's video and I leave a little bait question that's just like, hey man, I'm still waiting for you to correct your stuff on Clovis first. And eventually he shows up and he's like, hey, I need a source. Fair enough. So I point out that the Bluefish Caves, the first paper, 1979, by Jacques Cinq-Mars, would be the place that he would need to look to find that source. It talks about the artifacts that were found in 1979, about 32 years before the Clovis debate was put to bed. I also included an article that is an interview with Jacques Cinq-Mars and a couple of other archaeologists, and it discusses the entire Clovis debacle and how messed up it was, and basically to show him that it wasn't the case at all that the first artifacts undid everything. It took quite a few artifacts and quite a few papers and more than a couple of funerals before we got to where we are now. Now, it's important to pay attention to the exact wording here. This is the first goalpost that he sets up. He says, asks specifically, so please tell me what artifacts he claims to have found, because I can't see it in the paper. Yes, the emphasis on what there was from me, that's spoiler alert, that might matter, pay attention. He asked me specifically what artifacts were found. So I said, man, you know, it's scattered all throughout the paper. What is this crap? I don't like the way that he, you could argue about the color blue with him and he's going to be telling you that it's not blue, it's mauve. He's absurd. So anyway, I just told him, it's in the damn paper, go look at it. So his response is kind of funny because he claims it's the second time that he asked me this question, but it's actually the first. Now he says, where in the paper specifically does it say that artifacts were found? So originally it was what artifacts were found. When I tell him that's all throughout the paper, and it only took him a second to look and be like, oh shit, it's in the abstract, duh. Now all of a sudden the question is where. So at this point he shifted the goalpost slightly once. Instead of asking what artifacts were found, he's now asking where in the paper does it discuss the artifacts that are found. So I point out to him, it's in the abstract, where it talks about lithic specimens. And for those of you who aren't aware, lithic specimens are rock specimens that have been worked by humans. Now, if you're a geologist, like Potholer is, that's not necessarily true. But to an archaeologist, it definitely means they've been worked by human hands or carried by humans. Something is up with a human in order for an archaeologist to consider it a lithic specimen. That's not the case for a geologist, so it is understandable that we could have a little confusion here, except for that we are discussing archaeology, and I would expect him to at least do basic rudimentary levels of research, especially what I pointed out to him in just a second. So at this point, I've answered both of his questions. I've told him what artifacts they were lithic specimens, and where they were found in the paper. Damn abstract, man. Right out the gate, it talks about it. So where are we? Well, I'll tell you where we are. Now he's going to say, I don't see it. I don't understand where it is. He could say that I don't recognize lithic specimens as artifacts, but instead, he just says, I don't see it. I don't know. So again, please tell me. So I go to page 28 of the paper, which discusses microchips. And what microchips are is lithic specimens. They are a type of small, tiny flake of rock, usually associated with napping, but it can be from a number of things. Even rock dust technically would fall as a microchip of some sort, anything under like an eighth of an inch or a quarter inch, depending on who you ask. But at any rate, these are considered artifacts. So I point this out to him as well. Of course, he fails to recognize these as artifacts and just pretends that, once again, I'm not giving him any information at all. I don't see what you're saying, even though I directly quoted it. And so I realize at this point that he has seen the same quote a couple of times and he's not seeing the quote when he looks at it, so he must be avoiding the terminology here. He must have a problem with words that he's not specifying to me in our discussion, because he realizes that he's in the wrong here, is my guess. So I point out, I'm like, you know, lithic specimens, these are considered artifacts to archaeologists. Microchips are considered lithic specimens, which are artifacts. And an artifact is considered anything worked or made by a human hand. So these are artifacts. So when you ask me where does it say and what kind of artifacts are in this paper, well, it's these ones. They're lithic specimens, and it's on page 28, and it's on the abstract, and there's a few other examples in the paper as well, but why bother if he's not going to address the ones that are right under his damn nose? He responded with, "Thanks, but I'm not interested in your amateur interpretation." Fine, that's understandable, to be honest with you. I mean, it is really, really hard for a guy to get on Google and say, what is the definition of a lithic specimen in archaeology? And then get an answer that looks something like that on the screen here. But I've learned that expecting Potholder to like look at anything he doesn't want to is just not going to happen. So I went ahead and I followed his advice on his first video that's like knocking on Graham Hancock. He has this advice for people that wonder what archaeologists have to think.
If you want to know what archaeologists really think, ask them.
So I took him up on it. So I went to Twitter. And I asked a very simple question. If lithic specimens were considered artifacts, and if so, do microchips also count as artifacts? And unanimously, they agreed that lithic specimens are in fact artifacts, that microchips are in fact artifacts, that even dust from the making of a tool is technically an artifact, although an archaeologist would never go out of their way to gather such a thing unless there was an extremely weird reason to do so. Because I figured it is fair to say I don't know what I'm talking about because I'm just an electrician. So asking the archaeologist after Potholder has said that this is what you do if you want to know what an archaeologist thinks, this seemed like the reasonable thing to do. Of course, it's not. So how does he weasel out of that? By shifting the goalposts again, of course. Now he says, where does it say artifact in the paper that you cited that you claimed contained the word artifact? Which is not ever what I said. What I originally said was that the first paper that was published that had artifacts in it was that were pre-Clovis was the 1979 Bluefish paper. And I went on to say basically that over and over again, but I never once said you will find the word artifact in that paper. But that all of a sudden became the goalpost that he attached himself to because he knew he could win this because it was a straw man position. I never made that claim. And I'm not about to cede it and say, well, yeah, you got me there, because I didn't say the thing. So I repeatedly was just like, no, man, not playing that game. So I think it's important to note the level of intellectual dishonesty that he busted out here. He, despite his claims in all of his videos that he will change his stuff if he gets something wrong, what really matters is how many people come and complain to him and whether or not they're like his fans or not. A bunch of his fans show up and they're like, hey, man, you got the Y-Files guys wrong. He's going to change his video. But I show up and I'm like, here's a bunch of proof that you're crazy about the Clovis stuff. And he's going to shift the goalposts until we're arguing about a straw man of, you need to get the exact word in the paper of artifact. Synonyms won't count. It's like, are you effing kidding me? If I said there was this paper that Sir Isaac Newton wrote and it discusses planetary motion of all the planets in the solar system, then he was like, no, I read that paper and not once do I see the word planet. Well, yeah, but right here it talks about the planetary motion of Earth, and then there's one over here about Venus, and there's one about Mars, and there's one about Jupiter. Nope. I don't want to see Jupiter or Mars. I want to see the word planet. That's where his argument is at this point. And there's a couple of reasons that I find this problematic. Number one, like, you can see that his boys follow him. He's got people slowly falling off as they follow this thread because, of course, it's an untenable position. And anybody who knows anything about this knows that he's up shit creek here. So why is this such a problem? Well, the same reason that an archaeologist or a scientist like Potholer would complain about pseudoscientists, this is the same exact damn thing. I dare say it's even worse. Because, as I've mentioned before, he looks like an academic, right? This is Potholer. This isn't Graham Hancock. This isn't some nut job, right? This is a scientist. This is a science educator. This is a debunker. So when he comes out and spits falsehoods, it is extremely problematic. Because here's the thing. It works great with his audience, all right? All of his boys are like, yeah, kick his ass, Seabass. And the ones that recognize that was bullshit, that Clovis First really didn't go down like that at all, eh, they give him a pass. He really cares. Man, look what he's doing. He's doing great work here, right? But the guys on the other side of the fence that don't believe what Potholer's laying down, this undermines every single factual point that he makes because it shows them that he's full of shit, that he is willing to lie. And in the video, that clip, but then when he goes through all of this trouble to defend his position over and over and over again, to the point where he will back it all the way up to, you have to use the exact specific word, artifact. If we would have found a sword in Bluefish Cave, he would be telling me I needed to find the word artifact, that a sword doesn't count. That's where we're at with this shit. And just to highlight, just exactly how intellectually dishonest this guy has been throughout this entire thing, somebody else shows up in the thread, and they got a couple of things to say, and they ask some questions, and they weigh in, and they kind of are in the middle of the road here. They point out that Jack Cinq-Mars isn't exactly the best guy when it came to using the term lithic specimens. They also point out that these are lithic specimens, though, that they're artifacts, so he's kind of in the middle of the road here. But the way Potholer responds to this person is very telling. Check out one of the things that he says to that individual when they ask, what's going on in this threat? They don't understand. I don't have a copy of the paper, so I asked, please tell me where in the paper it says that artifacts were found. But when I originally posted the source, that's not at all what the man said, is it? When I originally posted the source, he's like, aha, finally something I can read. I think I found an error that you made. So which is it, Potholer? Did you read the paper or not? Did you have access to the paper or not? Or could you even keep your story straight? So I don't want to harp on this all day. I do want to end this really quick with a clip from Dr. Bill Farley from Archaeology Tube, just basically laying out the whole situation with the Clovis Mafia from an archaeologist's perspective and one that is not into Graham Hancock stuff. As a matter of fact, this video is debunking Graham Hancock's position on the Clovis thing. He's pointing out that eventually archaeology did change its position. And you know what? I agree with the man. That's true. The problem is that it took longer than it should have. And he's agreeing with that. There's a nuanced position here that a pyramidiate and an archaeologist with a PhD would both agree on. But Potholer refuses to find that middle ground because in order to do so, he would have to admit that he said something wrong here. He probably did rudimentary research on the Clovis thing. Maybe he openly misrepresented it. At this point, it doesn't really matter. He's willing to lie to maintain his position there in order to save face. So when he says at the end of every video, let me know, because if I did something wrong, I'll change my video. That's not true. All right, instead of harping about this any longer, I will say thank you very much for watching this far. I am working on a few other videos. I got like irons in the fire at this point right now, since the shorts thing isn't really working out. I'm just going to do longer videos and have a bunch of things going on, but some of them take more research than others. So thanks for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe, share, kick your friends in the butt and say, check out the hippie. Good God, it's getting hot this time of year. I live in the Pacific Northwest. I should not be sweating at fucking midnight. Have a good evening.
So the first thing that I think I can actually speak to is a element that Hancock talks about in the show, and I've seen a lot of people arguing about in comment sections and on Twitter and elsewhere, which is about the so-called Clovis First theory. Critics of archaeology have been using the Clovis First theory to make this assertion, that archaeologists are unwilling to change our ideas, to adopt new information, and to adopt new data into our ways of thinking and move the science forward in that way. It's sort of ironic because actually I think the Clovis First debate shows that archaeologists are really willing to do that. And it's actually a primordial example, if you will, of archaeologists doing exactly that. Now, the Clovis First theory works like this. For a long time in archaeology, many decades, the standard theory for the peopling of the Western Hemisphere, that is, how did people first get into North and South America, the people who are presumably the ancestors of today's Native Americans and indigenous people of North and South America. This has been a fundamental debate within archaeology for a very long time. And like I said, a theory came to be standard, that came to be the widely accepted theory that we call Clovis First. So the Clovis culture is this particular grouping of artifacts. So I'm going to use the word culture sort of carefully here, because really, what does the word culture mean? In this case, it's an old-fashioned sort of theoretical approach to understanding a culture, that a culture is actually simply just a series of often related, contextually associated artifacts. In this case, the so-called Clovis point, it's a very distinctive type of spear point, as well as gravers and stone tools made out of exotic materials that sometimes come from very far away, and some other related cultural traits that we find on sites all over North America, starting to pop up around 12,000-ish years ago. Right? This is the so-called Clovis culture. Like I said, it's actually probably a lot of different cultures loosely related to each other or simply passing along a technological tradition among one another. What Hancock sort of accuses archaeologists of doing, and there's a grain of truth in this, is holding too tightly to this theory. It was a very elegant theory. It was based on a couple of things happening in short succession with one another. First, sea levels being lower because of the Pleistocene and glaciers sucking up tremendous amounts of water out of the oceans, which made a section of land called Beringia exposed for some number of thousands of years. And Beringia connected northeastern Siberia to northwestern North America, right? So that you can have a land bridge that you could simply walk across. Now, the word bridge makes it sort of sound like this would have been narrow, but it would have been hundreds of miles wide. So you could simply follow, for instance, a herd of caribou across this bridge and not even know you'd done it. Suddenly you're in North America. And that had to happen simultaneously with the separation of the Cordilleran and Laurentide ice sheets, which created a so-called ice-free corridor that would allow people to then pass down into the rest of the Western Hemisphere. All those things happening together, the existence of Clovis sites all at the same time period across North America, the opening of the ice sheets and the exposure of Beringia, is called the Clovis First theory. And it's got the word first in it because it implies that those were the first people to exist in North and South America. In the 1980s and 1990s, sites started to be discovered. Some of them had been discovered long ago, but they started to be seriously considered that had radiocarbon dates that came from before those series of events occurred. So either they were too old to be Clovis, or they were too old for the ice-free corridor to be exposed, or perhaps even too old for Beringia to be exposed. And these sites came to be known as pre-Clovis sites. Here's the place where Hancock is onto a kernel of truth. There was a very strong debate within archaeology in the 1980s and 1990s about these sites. It took a long time for those sites to be accepted. Because this was an extraordinary claim, it required extraordinary evidence, something I'll come back to later. Were some archaeologists unfair to the archaeologists who were claiming pre-Clovis sites? Absolutely. My old PhD advisor used to call them the quote-unquote Clovis Mafia, which was this group of old-school archaeologists who really felt strongly about the Clovis First theory and didn't want to change their minds. But as more evidence emerged and sites like Monteverde, Paisley Caves, or Meadowcroft Rock Shelter continued to be tested and again seemed to strongly evidence the presence of these sites pre-Clovis, the sites were accepted and the theories were changed. So that by about the mid-1990s, it was becoming standard interpretation that there was in fact some set of sites and some number of people living in North and South America prior to the Clovis people coming up through Beringia and down through the ice-free corridor, right? So that's been the standard theory in archaeology for decades at this point, really about a quarter century at this point. So there's some irony in using this as a criticism for the argument that archaeologists don't want to change their minds. It is true that those theories were not accepted easily and lightly and without great evidence in the 80s and 90s, but they were eventually accepted, and they have now become the standard principle experience for archaeologists. Of course, we can add to that even further. We can see a similar thing happening right now, where there are sites that are potentially pushing back that timeline even further, such as the New Mexico footprint site, or much more controversially, the Cerruti Mastodon site, that some archaeologists are arguing that means that there might be people in North and South America tens or even 100,000 years earlier. Keep an eye on this channel for a video about the Cerruti Mastodon site, which is, I think, going to be the next thing I do.